Fields' great novel. The National Broadcasting Company presents the second in a two-part version of George Eliot's Silas Marner, another in our series of books that live the world's great novels.
The scene of our story is the English village of Rotherlow, nestled in a well-wooded hollow, quite an hour's journey on horseback from any turnpike. Our story concerns certain people of this village, whose lives, though far removed from each other in the beginning, became closely linked through the strange forces of destiny. There was Silas Marner, the weaver of Rotherlow, who for 15 years had lived as a miserly recluse in his small cottage near the stone pit. And though he had always been a subject of curiosity and speculation to the townspeople, he had of late become a favorite topic of conversation.
Still no trace of the thief that ran off with old Marner's gold, eh?
Not hiding or heritable. And being over a month since it was stolen, I have a doubt he'll ever be found.
Little did I think when he'd be bringing some linen he'd woven that skin and bones of a man dressed in rags was such a fortune hidden by.
Is the way with misers, you know. Old Marner saved his money for the sake of having it, not spending it. For his only pleasure in life.
Aye. Never shall I forget the night he burst into the rainbow like a madman. First time he'd ever set foot in the place, yelling and moaning that his precious gold was stolen.
Coming down the street toward us now. Look how bent and shriveled he is. You think an 80 instead of 40. I can't help but feel pity for him.
Why pity a man whose heart knows no love but that of gold?
Good morrow, Master Manners.
What?
May I say, I trust the new year when it comes will bring you happiness.
What's that?
Oh, come, Manners. Don't tell us you forgot this is New Year's Eve.
How could I forget? I did not know it to begin with.
Aye, New Year's Eve, to be sure. And you must be certain to sit up and hear the old year rung out and the new rung in.
Why should I?
Because, man, that will bring you good luck. Good fortune.
Fortune? Good fortune?
Aye.
You mean perhaps I shall get my gold back?
Yeah, I'm no prophet, but who knows? That is the saying.
That is the saying?
Aye.
Good fortune. Aye, perhaps my gold will be returned. I shall sit up tonight. I shall sit up and wait for it.
A lost soul.
Lost? Crazy, I say.
Now let us leave Silas Marner for a time and turn our attention to the big red house on the hill where lives Squire Cass and his four sons. Though Dunsey, the second son, has been absent since the night Marner's gold was stolen. Because the irresponsible Dunsey's disappearances were nothing unusual, no one in the town suspected the truth, that it was he who took the money. And indeed, to Godfrey, the eldest son, the absence of his brother has made life somewhat easier. For only Dunsey knew the real reason why Godfrey did not propose to the fair Miss Nancy Lammeter. Only he knew that some years before, Godfrey had married a barmaid named Molly Farren, whom, with his child, he had been able to keep hidden away in a distant village by supplying her with the money needed to quench her thirst for drink. On this New Year's Eve at the Red House, where a festive ball is in progress, Godfrey finds it hard to remember the tragedy of his life as he dances with the beautiful Nancy.
I've so looked forward to this evening, Miss Nancy.
I'm sure we all look forward to greeting our friends on New Year's Eve.
But I look forward to the honor of dancing with you.
Indeed, sir. I should imagine when gentlemen have so many pleasures, one dance can make but very little difference.
Oh, you know that isn't true. You know, one dance with you matters more to me than all the other pleasures in the world.
No, indeed, I don't know that. And I have very good reason for thinking differently.
Oh, I know I've acted a bit queerly at times for you.
Really, sir, you may say that, explanations, as I'm not in the least interested in hearing them.
You're very hard-hearted, Nancy. You might encourage me to be a better fellow. I'm very miserable. But you have no feeling.
I think those have the least feeling that act wrong to begin with.
Well, there seems to be some sort of commotion.
Look, it's the Hermit Wavered by this morning.
Whatever is he doing here?
He's carrying something in his... Why, it's a baby.
A baby? Lieutenant.
My God, sir, what is it? You're as white as the snow in the window panes. Do you feel ill?
No, It is... Excuse me, Nancy. I must find out what it is all about. Father, what is this about?
Did I want to know? What do you mean, coming in here this way, man?
I've come for the doctor. I want the doctor. I figured him here.
Yes, I'm here, man. But say quietly what you want me for. Where did you get that child?
It came to me through the snow right into my cottage. I was sitting up waiting for my gold. Suddenly I looked across my room and saw something bright shining by the fire. I thought it was my gold. And then I went closer and it was these golden curls I saw.
But whose baby is it?
Hers. The one I want the doctor for. She's dead, I think. Dead in the snow at the stone pit, not far from my door.
Dead, you say?
Aye.
And the child crawled into your cottage, eh? Well, I'll go with you and see the woman. And let somebody run and fetch Dolly Winthrop. She's the best woman to get when someone's ailing or dead.
I'll go and fetch Mrs. Winthrop.
Say, Godfrey, there is no cause for you to run out in this weather because some woman you never heard of is thought to be dead.
Please, Father, I really want to go.
No matter what, I should accept the consequences and own that she's my wife. But I haven't the courage. I'd lose Nancy altogether, and if she's dead, I may marry Nancy. And I shall be a good fellow in the future and have no secret. Well, I can see that the child is taken care of some way. But if she lives, what then?
Godfrey, you're still there.
I waited for you as I'd come so far. Is she?
She's dead, all right. And from the looks of her, I'd say she fell down in the snow from too much drink. They must fetch her away to the workhouse tomorrow for burial. Come inside Marner's cottage. You'll be freezing your feet off.
Don't make noise. The child is sleeping.
I suppose you'll take the child to the parish tomorrow.
Who says so? Will they make me take her?
Why, you wouldn't want to keep her, would you? An old bachelor like you?
Till anybody shows they've a right to take her away from me. The mother's dead, and I reckon it's got no father. It's a lone thing, and I'm a lone thing. My money went, and this come to take its place. I won't give it up unless you make me.
Why should I?
He means any of us good things. I don't reckon there'll be interference, man.
No, of course not. Here.
Huh?
Take this money and buy the little thing some clothes.
Master Man.
Good morning, Miss Winthrop.
I was here last night, you remember, with Dr. Kimball, looking at the poor woman. And I said to myself then that the first thing I do this morning was to bring you the little petticoats my son Aaron wore 5 years ago. What is it, the ill you spending the money on baby clothes? For the child will grow like grass. And here's the bundle, all of them clean fresh.
Thank you kindly.
I think you're in the right on it to keep the little in Master Marlin, seeing as it's been sent to you. It'll be a bit troublesome to you while it's so little, but I'll come and welcome and help you care for it.
Thank you. I'll be glad if you'll tell me things, but I want to do things for it myself. As it may get fond of somebody else and not fond of me. I've been used to fending for myself in the house. I can learn.
Oh, to be sure. I've seen men as are wonderful handy with children.
And she'll be my little one. She'll be nobody else's.
No, to be sure. You'll have a right to her if you're a father to her, and bring her up accordingly. But,
Aye?
Well, you must bring her up like Christian folks' children and take her to church. And I never saw you in the church of a Sunday Master, Marla.
I want to do everything as can be done for a child. And whatever's right for it, and you think it'll do it good, I'll act according if you'll tell me.
Well, then, Master Marvin, I'll speak to the parson about the christening, and you must fix on a name for it.
My mother's name was Hepzibah, and my little sister who died was named after her.
Hepzibah? Huh? But wasn't it awkward calling your little sister by such a hard name? When you got nothing big to say, Master Marla?
We called her Eppy.
Well, that'd be a deal handier. And so I'll go, Master Marla, and speak about the christening afore dark. And I'll bring my little Aaron one of these days to play with her. They can become good friends.
The baby was christened. And on this occasion, Silas, as clean and tidy as could be, appeared for the first time in the church and shared in the observances held sacred by his neighbors. And a great change came over Silas Marner. Where once he had delivered his linen to the housewives without a word of greeting, he now stopped a while and talked to each of them, always on the same subject.
Master Manuel, you'll be lucky if she takes the measles soon and easy.
I suppose it would be best of that.
Oh, she's a sturdy build even now, Manuel. A healthy loss she'll be.
I made these sweetmeats for Effie and do bring her to see me soon.
There is as many a lone man that have been wishing to take up with a little one like that, Master Manuel. It just shows what a warm heart you have.
It was a bright autumn Sunday, 16 years after Silas Marner had found his new treasure on the hearth. The bells of the old Ravelot church tolled. The morning service was ended. Among the first to leave was a tall, blonde man of 40. Not much changed in feature from the Godfrey cast of 26. He was now the master of the Red House, and by his side walked his wife, even lovelier in maturity than when she was the youthful Nancy Lameter.
Godfrey, let us wait here on the steps for Priscilla and father. They're coming to dinner with us today.
Certainly, my dear.
Though not even Nancy noticed, a shadow crossed Godfrey's face at that moment. As a simply clad old man with bent shoulders and white hair and a blossoming girl of 18 come into the sunlight. But Silas Marner and his Effie give little thought to the wealthy Cass family except for a courteous nod of their heads. And following Effie from the church is a good-looking young fellow of 24 trying to muster up the courage to come to her side as soon as they're out in the lane.
See how pretty the red mountain ash is over the retro wall, Father.
Aye, it is a lovely sight, my Eppie.
I wish we had a little garden, Father, with double daisies in like Mrs. Windsor.
Huh?
Only they said they could deal digging and bringing fresh soil, and you couldn't do that, could you, Father?
Aye, I could do it, child. If you want a better garden, I could work at it the morning before I sat down to my loom.
Oh.
Why didn't you tell me before you wanted a better garden?
I can dig it for you, Master Marner.
Aaron?
Good morning, Aaron.
Morning, Eppie. Master Marner, it'll be play for me to dig it for you after I've done my day's gardening for Mr. Cass.
Well, if you could help me with the digging, we might get Eppie her bit of garden all the sooner.
But not if you don't promise me not to work at the hard digging, Father.
Eh?
Well, I shouldn't have said anything about it, only Mrs. Winthrop said as Aaron would be...
And you might have known that without Mother telling. And Master Marner knows too, I hope, because I'm able and willing to do a ton of work for him. They won't do me the unkindness to refuse.
Oh, it'll be a dear lovely air for a stone pit. We've got some flowers.
Aye?
I'll have a bit of rosemary and bergamot and thyme because they're so sweet smelling. But there's no lavender, only in the gentle cook's garden. think.
Well, that's no reason why you shouldn't have some. I can bring you slips, but I'm forced to cut no end of them when I'm gardening and throw them away most of them. There's a big bed of lavender up at the Red House.
So long as you don't make free for us or ask anything is worth much at the Red House. For Mr. Cuss has been so good to us and built us up the new end of the cottage and given us beds and things just out of the goodness of his heart so that I couldn't be imposing for garden stuff.
Nah, there is no imposing. But I must go back now. Else Mother will be in trouble, as I aren't there.
After Silas and Eppie had returned to the little cottage, so different looking now than in the old days, and had eaten their simple dinner, they went out into the sun and again fell to talking of the garden.
Child, it's just come into my head. What are we to do for a fence? Mayhap Aaron can help us to a thought, But the fence we must have, else the donkeys and things will come and trample everything down.
I tell you, Daddy, there's lots of loose stone about the pit. Some of them not too big. And we might lay them atop one another and make a wall. Oh, Father, just come and look here.
What is it, child?
Come and see how the water has gone down in the pit since yesterday. Why, yesterday the pit was never so full.
Oh, well, to be sure, that's the draining they've begun on since harvest, I reckon. Mr. Godfrey Cass has begun the draining since he's been taking these fields in Mr. Osgood.
How odd it'll seem to have the old... Hey, Daddy, I can carry this stone quite to him.
You're fine and strong, are you? Come, let us sit down on the bank here and have no more lifting. Might hurt yourself, child.
No.
You'd need to have somebody to work for you, and my arm isn't overstrong.
Father, do you think it's time I got married?
Why, Eppie, have you been thinking on it?
Only since last week, Father. Aaron talked to me about it.
And what did he say?
Well, he said that he should like to be married because he was a gone in 24 and had got a good deal of gardening work and...
And who is it as he's wanting to marry?
Oh, I mean, to be sure, Daddy. As if he'd want to marry anybody else.
And you mean to have him, do you?
Yes. Sometime. I don't know when. Everybody's married sometime, Aaron says. But I told him that wasn't true, for I said, well, look at Father. He's never been married.
No, child. Your father was a lone man till you were sent to him.
But you'll never be lone again, Father. Aaron said, I could never think of taking you away from Master Marner, Eddie. And I said, it'd be no use if you did, Aaron. He wants us all to live together. And he'd be as good as a son to you. And he always does behave crazy to you, doesn't he, Father?
Aye, child, aye. Nobody could behave better. He's his mother's lad.
Oh, then you would like me to be married, Father?
I'll not be the man to say no, Eppie. But we'll ask your godmother. We'll ask Mrs. Winthrop. She'll wish the right thing by you and her son, too.
And on this same Sunday afternoon, in the garden of the Red House, Mrs. Godfrey Cass is walking with her sister, Miss Priscilla Lamiter.
I'm glad as anything at your husband's making that exchange of land with Cousin Osgood and beginning a dairy. My dear, you'll never be low in spirits when you've got a dairy to look after.
Ah, Priscilla, but it won't make up to Godfrey. I'm contented with the blessings we have, if only he could be contented.
Oh, it drives me past patience, that way of the men. Always wanting and wanting, and never satisfied with what they've got.
Oh, don't say so, Priscilla. It's natural he should be disappointed at not having any child. Every man likes to have somebody to work for and lay by for.
He once told me he had his heart set on adopting that Effie child the Weaver Marner has raised.
Aye, he did some years ago. And that worried me to this day, for I was against it. I felt that to adopt a child because children of your own had been denied you was to try and choose your lot in spite of Providence.
I agree.
But now, I wonder if maybe it wasn't wrong to deprive Godfrey of that pleasure. He never tried to persuade me against my will. But I can look in his eyes and know how lonely he is.
Thank you.
Marden Mumps?
Yes, Jane?
Will Miss and Master Lameter be here for tea?
No, Jane. They went home.
It's fine, Mum. Shall I serve you tea?
Has your master come into the yard, Jane?
No, he hasn't.
Then we shall wait for him.
I don't know whether you've seen him, Mum, but there's folks making haste all one way down the lane. I figure something's happened. I hope nobody's hurt.
Oh, no, I dare say there's nothing much the matter. It's perhaps Mr. Snell's bull got out again, as he did before.
Yes, ma, I hope that's all. But the way folks is running.
Oh, Joe.
If there's no need for me, I think I'll go back to the window and watch for what I can see.
Dear, I'm so thankful you've come. I began to...
Sit down, Nancy. Sit here.
Godfrey, what did...
I came back as soon as I could. Can't hear anybody telling you but me. I've had a great shock. But I care most about the shock it'll be to you.
It isn't Father or Priscilla.
No, it's nobody living. It's Dunstan. My brother Dunstan that we lost sight of 16 years ago. We found him. Found his body, his skeleton.
Where?
The stone pit has gone dry suddenly. And the draining, I suppose. And there he lies. Has lain for 16 years, wedged between two great stones. His watch and seal are still there.
Do you suppose he drowned himself?
No. He fell in. Nothing. Dunstan was the man that robbed Silas Marner.
Oh, no, Godfrey.
All the weaver's money was in the pit, too. Everything comes to light, Nancy, sooner or later. And God Almighty wills it, our secrets are found out. I've lived with a secret on my mind, but I'll keep it from you no longer. I wouldn't have you find it out after I'm dead, so I'll tell you now.
Yippee, you see, the money was taken away from me and you were sent. And the money's been kept till it was wanted for you. It takes no hold on me now. The money doesn't. I wonder if it ever could again. You did not know, Eppie, when you were such a little one. You did not know what your old father, Silas, felt for you.
But I know now, Father. If it hadn't been for you, there'd have been nobody to love me.
Ah, my precious child. The blessing was mine.
I'll go, Father.
Huh?
I wonder who it might be. Oh, what? Mrs. Cass. Master Cass.
We're disturbing you very late, my dear.
Oh, well, not at all. Please come in. Would you sit down?
Thank you, Effie.
Oh, here. You take this chair, Mrs. Cass.
Yes, my dear.
Well, Manor, it's a great comfort to me to see you with your money again that you've been deprived of so many years. It was one of my family did you the wrong, and I feel bound to make it up to you in every way.
Well, sir, I have a deal to thank you for already. As for the robbery, I counted no loss to me, and if I did, you are not answerable for it?
You may look at it that way, Manor, but I never can. You've done a good part by Eppie, Manor, for 16 years. It would be a great comfort to you to see her well provided for, wouldn't it? You'd like to see her taken care of by those who can make a lady of her and leave her well off?
I don't take your meaning, sir.
Well, my meaning is this, Manor. Mrs. Cass and I, you know, have no children. Nobody to benefit by our good home and everything else we have. And we should like to have somebody in the place of a daughter to us. We should like to have Eppie. And treat her in every way as our own child. And Eppie, I'm sure, will always love you and be grateful to you and come to see you very often. And we should be on the lookout to do everything we could to make you comfortable.
Eppie, my child, speak. I won't stand in your way. Thank Mr. and Mrs. Cass.
Thank you, Mom. Thank you, sir. Oh, but I can't leave a father nor on anybody nearer than him. I don't want to be a lady. Oh, thank you all the same, but I couldn't give up the folks I've been used to.
But I have a claim on you, Eppie. The strongest of all claims. It is my duty, Manor, to own Eppie as my child and provide for her. Yes, she is my own child. Her mother was my wife. I have a natural claim on her that must stand before every other.
Then, sir, why did you not say so 16 years ago and claim her before I'd come to love her? Instead of now, when you might as well take the hat out of my body.
But I think you might look at the thing more reasonably, Manor. It isn't as if you'd never see her again. And I should have thought your affection for Effie would have made you rejoice in what was for her good, even if it did call upon you to give up something.
I'll say no more. Let it be as you will. Speak to the child. I'll hinder nothing.
Effie, my dear, it'll always be our wish that you'll show love and gratitude to one who's been a father to you so many years. But we hope you'll come to love us as well, and you'll have the best of mothers in my wife.
My dear, you'll be a treasure to me. We shall want for nothing when we have our daughter.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, sir, for your offers. They're very great and far above my wish. But I should have no delight in life anymore if I was forced to go away from my father. Know that he was sitting at home thinking of me and feeling lonely. And I'll cleave to him as long as he lives. And nobody shall ever come between him and me.
What you say is natural, my dear. Natural, you should cling to those who brought you up. But there's a duty to your own lawful father.
I can't feel as if I've got any father but one. I wasn't brought up to be a lady. I can't turn my mind to it. I'm like working folks and their houses and their ways. And I'm promised to marry a working man as I live with father and help me to take care of him.
Godfrey.
Yes, Nancy. We had better go.
There was one time of the year which was held in Raveloe to be especially suitable for a wedding, the season of the lilacs. And on by far the sunniest of these days, the villagers of Raveloe lined the lanes to watch and admire the beauty of Effie as she walked toward the church. She was attired in white, and her hair looked like the dash of gold on a lily. As she clasped her father's arm, she leaned toward him and said,
"You won't be giving me away, Father. You'll only be taking Aaron as a son to you."
Silas Marner by George Eliot is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company. Listen next week to the first episode in a three-part version of The Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. And remember that there's a world of entertainment to be had in your local public library. To enhance your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Silas Marner was adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the orchestra was directed by Bernard Berquist. The entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Jack Lester is the narrator. Silas Marner is played by Arthur Peterson, Nancy by Geraldine Kay, Effie by Martha McCain, Godfrey by Everett Clark, Priscilla by Ruth Shames, Dolly Winthrop by Mignon Schreiber, and Aaron by Charles Mountain. Others were Lucille Laurel, Cliff Norton, Sherman Marks, and Les Spears. This is John Conrad. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. The schools are yours. Whether they are good or bad depends on you. So take an alert and active interest in improving educational conditions in your community. This is American Education Week. Begin your campaign for better education by visiting a school in your community. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.